invited me to hunt pheasants at their club, an hour out of New York City. At the time, I did not really know the two young men. Spending the day in the mud and the cold, slogging through knee-high water, and chasing pheasants with dogs, let me know how truly special and unique they are. I got to see them outside of the high-rise offices next to the Plaza Hotel and Central Park on Fifth Avenue. One of the first things I noticed is that both young men shoot and collect the same antique shotguns I collect. They are old shotguns, about 75 years old, from Belgium, made by Francot, a family of gunmakers few people have heard of. The next thing I noticed was how kind and respectful Eric and his brother were to everyone. They were not snobbish or arrogant. They were not even phony gentlemen. They were truly kind and respectful. It did not matter if the people were members of the club or workers of the club. All people were treated with the same warmth and respect. Later, as we drove back to New York City, we stopped by an old village inn, possibly 200 years old, to have a meal. Again, both young men went out of their way to greet and say hello to the staff of the restaurant. While the patrons gawked and stared at the two young celebrities, Eric and his brother went behind the counter into the kitchen to say hello to the kitchen staff. I gained a new level of respect for each of them on that day. Their kindness is extraordinary. In 2008, I invited both young men to a private island in the chain of Hawaiian Islands for a hunt. As we drove to the helicopter pad, Eric was texting his sister, Ivanka, a special family recipe. When I asked him if he knew how to cook, he and his brother chimed in saying, "Of course." When I asked them how they learned to cook, both young men explained that they saw their family service staff as servants for their mom and dad, not servants for them. Rather than become spoiled kids who expected to be waited upon by their parents' servants, they learned to cook and take care of themselves and each other. I can say that all three children truly love each other. Today, I see all three kids as incredible role models for the next generation, just as their dad and mom were role models for my generation. It is with personal gratitude that my life's work has put me in contact with the Trump family and the people of the Trump Organization. Robert Kiyosaki.
For as long as I can remember, every morning started out the same way. I would make my way to my father's bedroom before school and kiss him goodbye. As I was leaving, he would always say, "And remember, Eric, never trust anyone." These certainly are not the words you typically hear a father say to a son who is heading off to kindergarten. And the true meaning of the words didn't quite resonate until adulthood. Today, however, as I grow our business, my father's lesson is more relevant than ever. I first learned the meaning of my father's words from my older brother Don, who is not only my best friend, but also a mentor to me to this day. After school, Don would always suggest that we trade the coins in our piggy banks. I would happily exchange my quarters for several of his shiny pennies, thinking that the quantity I was receiving far outweighed the actual value of my coins. One day, I walked into my father's room with my pile of pennies to show him what a great investment I had just made. Noticing how Don was conning his little brother, my father looked at me, explained the concept of value versus quantity, and exclaimed, "Eric, what did I tell you? Never trust anyone." Suddenly, I remembered his daily admonition. Today, as Executive Vice President of Development and Acquisitions for the Trump Organization, I encounter situations on a daily basis that make me reflect on my father's words and advice. I have realized that self-reliance is a business person's most essential tool. Take one particular instance. I was negotiating a mutual partnership to bring an ultra-exclusive restaurateur into one of our projects. After months of tedious negotiations, the night before we intended to sign the deal, I learned, through a slip-up made by one of the restaurateur's architects, that they had been instructed to build a restaurant far exceeding all our agreed-upon budgets. Shocked by the dishonesty and fraudulent intentions exhibited by my would-be partner, I immediately cut off all negotiations and ended the deal. I am a firm believer that everything happens for a reason, and despite being upset over months of wasted efforts, today I have a smile on my face knowing we made the right decision, went with a different restaurateur, and now own the most successful restaurant in the city. In a similar instance, my father knew a successful businessman who pledged to donate $40 million to be paid in four equal installments to his alma mater. After paying the first two installments, the businessman ran into severe financial difficulties and asked the college for additional time in which to pay the remaining $20 million. Instead of being grateful for the $20 million that it had received, the college sued this man for both non-performance and breach of his contractual obligations. Eventually, this individual was forced to file for bankruptcy, and though he ultimately made a full financial recovery and was able to come back even stronger than before, he vowed to never give another cent to the college. I have been fortunate to have lived a privileged life, and am sincerely grateful for my family, education, and upbringing. However, make no mistake that with this lifestyle, I also faced difficult challenges. It is human nature to be envious of what other people have. However, oftentimes such envy creates a variety of rationalizations for bad behavior. As a child, you do not necessarily see or know that you are privileged or underprivileged, and therefore you can be an easy target for people who may have ill intentions. That was me. But my father's words helped me to see the world as it is, and learn that people usually act in their own self-interest, even to the detriment of others at times. This belief is a fine line to walk because I typically like to give people the benefit of the doubt. But as I grow older, I often tend to expect the worst from people so I can avoid being taken by surprise or being disappointed. It is an unfortunate but necessary stance. However, it gives me a new appreciation and insight into what my father was trying to instill in me as a young child. Discernment comes with experience. In business and in life, there is simply one reality. There are good people and bad. There always have been and always will be. The simple lesson to learn is trust yourself, not others. Keep your head out of the clouds, and you will always succeed.
As an executive vice president of development and acquisitions for the Trump Organization, Eric Trump is actively involved in all aspects of real estate development, both nationally and internationally. From the initial acquisitions and development partnership to the final design, construction, sales, and marketing functions, he plays a pivotal role in Trump projects around the world. Eric appears as a keynote speaker for real estate conferences nationwide, as well as in various press outlets, such as CNBC, Fox, NBC, and the New York Post. Along with his work with the Trump Organization, he works fervently to aid children in need, having started the Eric Trump Foundation for St. Jude Children's Hospital.
23. Robert Kiyosaki. Overcoming the Fear of Failing. For years, I have traveled the world, speaking on entrepreneurship and investing. My intent is to highlight the importance of financial education and how financial education is essential to financial freedom and financial security. When asked what I personally invest in, I say, I became financially independent investing in real estate. Regardless of where I am, the United States, Australia, South Africa, Europe, or Asia, or to whom I am speaking, rich or poor, what I hear back are similar responses to the idea of investing in real estate. Here are a few choice comments. I don't want to fix toilets. I don't have any money. I don't have the time. Real estate is risky. What if I lose money? You can't do what you do here. It is my opinion that these responses are simply excuses. Excuses that mask a deeper, darker, hidden, unexpressed reality. In my opinion, most people who use these excuses are 1. Not educated in real estate. 2. Lazy. 3. Afraid of failing. 4. All of the above. I say this because most people want to be financially free. Most people would love to have financial security. Most people would love to have money coming in regardless of whether they worked or not. Many people would love to stop working and do something they really wanted to do. To me, real estate represents freedom. Real estate means control over my life and my future. I am not depending upon a retirement plan filled with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, investments that someone else manages. I want control of my financial destiny. This is why, when I hear such excuses as, I don't have any money, or I don't want to fix toilets, I know these excuses are just that. I know people are looking at the journey, not the destination. A friend of mine has two sayings about this human failing. His first saying is, everybody wants to go to heaven, but no one wants to die. His second, many people will not start the journey until all the lights are green. Tip. Unfortunately, too many people allow their excuses to get between them and the life they would love to live. Rather than look beyond real estate, looking at what becoming a real estate investor can do for their lives, most people are blinded by their own excuses. They see what they are afraid of rather than what they want in life. Fear and laziness blur their vision, limiting the boundary of their lives. The following are my points of view regarding the four excuses. Excuses of the poor. Excuse number 1. No education. Most people are smart enough to invest in real estate. Investing in real estate is not that tough. Anyone who has bought a home or rented a place to live has invested in real estate. So investing in real estate is not tough. Making money in real estate is another matter. Making money in real estate takes real estate education. When I speak of making money in real estate, I am speaking of cash flow. Cash flow is income coming in every month, regardless of whether I work or not. I am not talking about capital gains. When people say their house has appreciated in value, or they flipped a property, buying low, fixing it up, and selling it, they are speaking of capital gains. There is a tremendous difference between cash flow and capital gains. In my opinion, capital gains are easier to achieve than cash flow. Achieving sustainable cash flow requires a higher degree of financial education. The good news is you do not have to go to college for 4 years to get this education. A 3-day seminar is sufficient, if it is a good seminar. The Rich Dad Company offers beginning and advanced courses in real estate investing. In 1997, when Rich Dad Poor Dad was published, I wrote about the difference between assets and liabilities. My Rich Dad's definitions were simple. Assets put money in your pocket, and liabilities take money from your pocket. In the book, I stated, your house is not an asset. It is a liability. In other words, for most people, their biggest real estate investment, their house, cash flows out, not in. I received hate mail for years because of this one point. After the subprime mess, massive foreclosures, and declining home values, millions of people now realize that real estate can be either an asset or liability. For most people, their home is a liability, even if the mortgage is paid off. Most homes are liabilities because most homes do not produce any income, Most homes cost money for insurance, property tax, repairs, and other expenses. If a person sells his or her home and the sale puts money in that person's pocket, at that moment, the home is an asset. Until then, it is a liability. Tip: to be financially free, your real estate must produce income in good or bad economies. Once you learn to do that, you are free for life. This is why a little financial education is important. Excuse number 2. Laziness. Laziness is a personal matter. I know I am lazy. I battle the lazy boy inside of me on a daily basis. For example, when I wake up, I know I should go to the gym, but the lazy boy says, "Oh, you can exercise tomorrow. Why not make a cup of coffee and read the paper?" By the age of 2, most people are experts at making excuses. When I hear people say, "I don't want to fix toilets," or "I don't have enough money," I know these are excuses from a lazy person because I use the same excuses. When I hear someone repeat to me the same excuses I use for myself, I want to say, "What makes you think I want to fix toilets?" Or, "What makes you think I have money?" But what I really want to say is, it's because I don't want to fix toilets, and it's because I want to have a lot of money. That's why I invest in real estate. Rich Dad often said, "Many lazy people are hard-working people." At first, I did not understand what he meant. As I got older, I began to understand his words more clearly. Growing older, I also found it easier to be at work than it was to do what I needed to do. Today, I still use excuses such as, "I'm busy," or "I have too much work to do," or "I need a break." Today, I meet many hard-working people hiding behind the curtain of hard work, yet deep down, they are too lazy to get rich. So they invent an excuse. When I was in high school, my poor dad often said to me, "I can't go to your football game because I've got work to do." He never attended a game in the 3 years I played high school football. He also said the same thing about becoming rich, or at least financially free. He was always busy. In my opinion, he often used hard work as an excuse to hide from life. He was a good, hard-working, high-income, poor man. My rich dad was a rich man because he did not work hard for money. Instead, he worked hard at having his money work hard for him. The harder his money worked, the more money he made, and the more free time he had. The more free time he had, the more money he made. This drove my poor dad crazy. My poor dad often called people like my rich dad the idle rich. Rather than have his money work hard, my poor dad put his money in the bank. My poor dad believed in saving money. This drove my rich dad crazy. He would say, "Your father works hard because his money is lazy. All your dad's money does is sit in the bank. I come along, borrow your dad's money, buy a piece of real estate, and put your dad's money to work for me." Tip: professional education is all about learning to work for money. Financial education is all about learning to have money work for you. So the question is, who works harder, you or your money? Excuse number 3. Fear of failing. Fear is often a combination of lack of education and laziness. The acronym FEAR stands for False Evidence Appearing Real. Because of fear, many people see only what can go wrong. Due to lack of education, they cannot see what can go right. When I am asked, "How does a person overcome the fear of failing?" I simply reply, "Get some education, gain some experience, find a mentor, and get off your butt." In other words, improve your vision. See what most people cannot see. See the opportunities most people cannot see because of fear. See the destination and the journey. Tip. One of the reasons I have a team of advisors when I invest is simply that each person sees something different. After listening to what each person has to say, I then make up my mind. Most great investments are right in front of you. The problem is seeing them. The reason most investments are hard to see is that great investments are seen with your mind, not your eyes. Years ago, I wanted to buy a piece of ranch land. My dream was to build a remote mountain cabin in the woods. I also wanted it for free. After challenging my mind, I went looking for my dream. A few months later, I came across a spectacular piece of property. It was approximately 80 acres, including an old rock house built in the 1880s. The asking price was $115,000. I believe I put $10,000 down, with the terms of no interest and no payments, and asked for 1 year to pay off the balance. After fixing the house, I subdivided the property, sold 30 acres with the house for approximately $215,000. I put some money, about $75,000, net in my pocket, and still have the 50 free acres today. After the transaction was completed, a neighbor who lived in a remote cabin a few miles away came by and was upset that I made money and got 50 acres for free. She had watched the property for years, but did nothing. She had a similar idea, but failed to buy the property because she was afraid of failing. "What would you have done if you had failed?" she asked. "What if the property had not sold?" "I still would have had my dream," I replied. "It would not have been for free, yet I would still have my dream." "But what if you had failed?" she demanded. Taking a deep breath, I replied, "I knew that if things did not work out, I would have been creative and tried something else. Every failure would have made me smarter and eventually more successful. You can fail only if you do nothing." She looked back at me and said, "And I did nothing, so I failed." Shrugging my shoulders, I said softly, "I leave that decision up to you." The deadliest word. One of the most deadly words in the English language is the word try. When someone says they will try to do something, I know they will probably not do it. There is a world of difference between the statements, "I will try to do it," and "I will do it." The difference between the two statements is the word commitment. My favorite way of describing the word commitment comes from the following question and answer. Question: what is the difference between bacon and eggs? Answer: the chicken is involved, but the pig is committed. If you want to become financially free, don't be a chicken. Get committed. Forbid yourself from using the word try. You either will or you won't. The power of education. About 20 years ago, I took a simple 2-day course on creative financing. I believe I paid about $350 for the program. I think lunch was included. If it hadn't been for that course, I would not have seen the free land opportunity. My neighbor, who did not take the course, could not see what I saw. All she could see was failure. As most of us know, we are in the information age. The problem is, there is too much information. The reason education is important is that education trains our brains to selectively take in information and turn information into meaning. Due to a lack of real estate education, my neighbor was overwhelmed with information, most of it negative. Her brain was not trained to focus, process information, and turn it into positive meaning. That is why a little real estate education can be priceless. Rich people and cowards. Fear is a very powerful human emotion. How we handle fear determines if we become rich people or cowards. When it comes to money, fear turns most people into cowards. Is it okay to have fear? While fear causes most people to do nothing, fear causes other people to take action. Since I do not want to fail and lose money, I take real estate education classes and read books on real estate. I did it 20 years ago and am still learning today. That is why I could ask my brain to find me a piece of land that I didn't have to pay for and why I continue to invest today. Buying the 80 acres or any investment, I still have fear. I still fear losing. I just use my fear to take action and get smarter. I know that if things do not go right, I will use my creative mind and gain wisdom in the process. Many people use the fear of failing as a reason to do nothing. Tip: Fear causes most people to do nothing. Fear causes other people to take action. I still have fear. I still fear losing. I just use my fear to take action and get smarter. Then there are people who attend real estate classes, study hard, and they still let fear stop them. One reason is due to analysis paralysis. That means they study too much. When it comes time to put their money on the line, the coward in them chimes in and gives them all the reasons why the deal will not work. Just before they sign the papers, Chicken Little pops into their head and begins to shout, "The sky is falling! The sky is falling!" Just as I battle the lazy boy in me, I also do battle with my own resident Chicken Little. One of the beauties of real estate is that you have time to think. There have been many times that I have found a piece of property, put in an offer, had the offer accepted, and then I began my research, a process known as due diligence. It is during this due diligence period, a period that can be as short as a week or as long as 6 months, that I bring in my team of advisors and mentors. When I make the final decision either to buy or back out, I make it as a member of a calm, rational, educated, and experienced team, like the team who contributed to this book. Due diligence periods do not guarantee success. There can still be unforeseen problems. If a problem arises, again, I call on a team to assist me with problem solving, and it is that problem solving that increases my wisdom, wisdom that I can use on the next investment. At minimum, even if I lose some money, I will be smarter than someone who did nothing. It is with this philosophy that I invest, in spite of my fear. Excuse number 4. All of the above. All of us are human. All of us need more education. All of us can be lazy. All of us are afraid of failing. The difference between all of us begins with all of the traits that make us human. The difference between all of us begins with how we address our excuses. The following are some of the ways I personally address the 4 excuses. Addressing excuse number 1. No real estate education. My financial education began with the game of Monopoly. Rich Dad would play that game with his son and me over and over again. When I asked him why we played the game so often, he said, "Because the formula for great wealth is found in this game." Most of us know the formula, which is this: 4 greenhouses turns into 1 red hotel. At the age of 9, I realized that I could be rich if I followed this simple formula and turned a game into real life. To show us the game being played in real life, Rich Dad took his son and me to see his greenhouses. 10 years later, when I was 19, Rich Dad bought his red hotel on Waikiki Beach. When I returned to Hawaii from the Vietnam War, I asked my Rich Dad how I could get started in real estate. His reply was, "First, get educated. I've taken you as far as I can go. You need to take the next step. A month later, I was watching television and saw an infomercial for a real estate course. I purchased the course for $385, which was a fortune at the time, since I made only about $600 a month as a Marine Corps pilot. It was after the course ended that my real education began. Everything the instructor taught us came true. He said, "The first problems you will run into are real estate agents. Most real estate agents are salespeople, not investors. They would not know a good investment from a bad one." This is true today. For months, all I heard from real estate agents is, "You can't do that. Those deals do not exist." The next thing the instructor said was, "Find a mentor, someone who did invest in real estate." Since my rich dad was already my mentor, I went immediately to him. Rich Dad's first words were, "How can I teach you something until you do something?" Tip: how can I teach you something until you do something? Rich Dad. For the next few months, I drove around in my spare time, looking at properties, talking to real estate agents, finally doing something, as my rich dad had suggested. After I finally put an offer in on a property, I ran back to Rich Dad and proudly showed him the offer. As you can already guess, he ripped it to pieces. Although it was painful to find out how little I knew, that experience was priceless, because I was finally doing something. The deal I brought him was a low-down payment deal. The problem was I lost money every month. It was a negative cash flow investment. Rich Dad's lesson was, how many investments can you afford if you lose money every month? Obviously, my reply was, not many. His next question was, why do you want to pay money to lose money? Because the real estate agent said the price would go up and I would make my money back, I replied. Will the real estate agent guarantee that? Rich Dad asked. I don't know, I replied. He just said I would make a lot of money when I sold it. Will he guarantee that? Asked Rich Dad again. I don't know, I replied again. He then said, rather than lose money, how many investments can you afford if you make money every month? Thinking for a while, I replied hesitantly, as many as I can find. Rich Dad smiled and said, go out and find investments you can make money on. Never bring me an investment that you pay to lose money on. Never bet on a property going up in value. It was back to the streets. As Rich Dad said, how can I teach you something until you do something? I was beginning to learn something. My next lesson was learning to handle discouragement. As time dragged on, I became more and more discouraged. Everything was too expensive or would have cost too much money in repairs. Dragging my tail between my legs, I went back to Rich Dad for some sympathy. And as you can guess, he gave me none. When I complained about not having enough money, Rich Dad just laughed. His lesson was, when you find an investment that makes money, you will find the money. A month later, I found a one-bedroom, one-bath condominium on the island of Maui, one block from a gorgeous white sand beach. I was excited that I finally found a great investment. I bought three of them, with credit cards and seller financing. Each month, I made a net $25 per unit. I was making money, not losing money. Rich Dad was correct. When you find a great investment, you will find the money. Tip: when you find a great investment, you will find the money. Rich Dad. For your information, even if $25 does not sound like much, it is one of four sources of income. In real estate, the four sources of income are 1. Cash flow. In this example, I was making $25 a month. 2. Amortization. Each month, a little bit of my loan was being paid off. If I held the property to the end of the mortgage, technically my tenants would have paid off my mortgage. 3. Depreciation. Accounting and tax rules allow me to depreciate my property, which means I am making money, but it looks like I am losing money. I am making money because I am legally allowed to pay less in taxes. So this is money coming in because less money is paid out in taxes. It is also known as phantom cash flow. 4. Appreciation. This is the price of the unit going up in value. Appreciation is also known as capital gains. Most people invest for appreciation. During the last real estate boom, flippers were buying and then selling for a profit. This is investing for appreciation, capital gains. These four sources of income are also known as IRR, an internal rate of return. Being able to see these four different incomes gives me a lot more confidence. As I said earlier, I don't invest for appreciation, I invest for cash flow. In fact, one of the reasons why I do not like to flip property is that I like all four of these income opportunities, and it takes such a long time to find a great property. Another reason why I do not like to flip a property is that I can gain access to my appreciation without selling the property. For example, let's say I buy a property for $200,000, and a few years later it goes to $300,000. Rather than sell the property, I would rather borrow out the equity and continue to let the tenant pay for my second mortgage. Obviously, I borrow only if my rent can cover the increase in monthly payments. I learned the hard way about selling or flipping a property. Here's the story. More than fixing a toilet. I wish I could say my education was complete after I bought the three units. Little did I know that the next phase of education was about to begin, an education in property management. After owning the three condos for a few months, the septic system on the entire development burst, and the sewage runoff ran into one of my condos. Next on my real estate education curriculum was how to deal with developers, homeowners associations, lawyers, and a smelly rental unit. My first plumbing problem was much bigger than fixing a toilet. Selling out of the problem. The good news is, even though I was losing money because the tenants moved out, the Maui real estate market was taking off. A real estate agent, the very type of person I was warned to be wary of in my real estate course, offered me $48,000 per unit. Since my base cost was only $18,000 a unit, my gross capital gains would be about $30,000 a unit. The money and the septic system went to my head. I sold. Immediately after I sold and put the money in my pocket, the real estate agent sold the units for $65,000 a unit a few weeks later. The lessons were piling up. I made money, but I was really losing money. The septic system caused me to think emotionally rather than rationally. In real estate investor terms, the septic system made me a perfect candidate for another investor. I became known as a don't-wanter. A don't-wanter is someone who does not want their property. They want out. They are emotional and irrational. Soon after the subprime mortgage mess hit in 2007, the market was filled with don't-wanters. Great investors love don't-wanters. If you want to become rich, look for don't-wanters, and then look at the real estate they don't want. The bigger problem and better lesson. Another lesson I gained from that first experience is this. If just starting out, make sure the real estate is less than an hour's drive away. Since these properties were on another island, When there was a problem, I had to take time off from work, drive to the airport, park my car, take a flight, rent a car, drive an hour to the property, work on the problem, and then hurry back home, missing a day's work. That was expensive. Today, I can handle properties far away, but when I was just starting out, I should have found a property as close to home as possible, less than an hour's drive away. After you have purchased at least 10 properties, because each property will have a new lesson, then you can start expanding your operational radius. More properties, more problems, more money. Next on my educational curriculum were capital gains taxes. Selling the 3 units put a lot of money in my pocket, and I spent it. The next year, I found out what capital gains taxes were. I had made money, and now I had tax problems. I found out that the government tax collectors do not like excuses. Every property comes with different problems and different lessons. Each lesson caused me to seek further education and gain more real-life experience. This is how I got smarter, wiser, and richer. I got richer by failing. I found out that people who do not fail also do not succeed. Tip: I got richer by failing. I found out that people who do not fail also do not succeed. Today, my wife Kim and I own approximately 1,500 apartment units and earn more money in a month than most people earn in years. While the education and experiences have not stopped, the financial rewards have gone up. Even during the subprime mortgage crisis, our properties have continued to do well. No matter how tough times get, most people want a roof over their heads. As far as mentors go, the real estate professionals in this book are our mentors. Whenever Kim and I have a question, these are the people we call. Simply said, our education never ends because the problems and challenges we face never end. So how does one overcome the fear of failing? My answer is grow up. Since failing is part of learning, start with baby steps. Babies crawl before they walk, and walk before they run. Babies fall many times during the learning process. That is why it is good that babies are short when they start out. They do not have far to fall. Our educational system makes 2 big mistakes when teaching people. The first mistake is that it punishes students for making mistakes. If you make no mistakes, you are an A student. If you make too many mistakes, you are labeled a failure. This is why so many people who did well in school do not do well in real life. The second mistake is that in school, you have to take tests on your own. If you cooperate with your classmates during test time, it is called cheating. One of the reasons I make more money than many A students is because I make more mistakes and I cheat, meaning that I cooperate. This book is written by the people I cooperate with at test time. How to find great advisors and mentors. A question I am often asked is, how do I find great advisors and mentors? My reply is, in fairy tales and in real life, you kiss many frogs before you find a prince or princess. So start kissing. One valuable lesson I have learned is, in every bad deal, I meet good people. For example, I was working on a deal with a person who talked like and looked like he knew what he was doing. Joe, not his real name, had the credentials and the diplomas. Then the deal we were working on went bad, and his true personality, his dark side, came out. The good thing was that I met Ken McElroy through the process. I do not know where Joe is today, but Ken and I have become great friends and have gone on to make millions of dollars together. Today, I am not afraid of deals going bad because I know that through bad deals, I meet good people. In other words, when deals go bad, the true character, the good or the bad in a person, comes out from behind the curtain. How do you overcome the fear of failing? Here are 10 things you can do right now. 1. Take classes or read books before starting. If you have no money, go to the library. Remember, your mind is your greatest asset. Invest in that first. 2. Avoid taking advice from losers. Stay away from people who say that something cannot be done. Be aware of real estate salespeople who give investment advice, but who do not invest in real estate. 3. Find mentors, people who have already gone to where you want to go. 4. Look at a minimum of 100 investments before buying anything. Take a new route home from work and look at different neighborhoods. Jog or ride a bike in new neighborhoods. Observe if neighborhoods are changing, going up or going down. Talk to people who live in the area to find out what is going on. Once you find an area you are interested in, become a five-block expert. Become the smartest person in 1 square mile. When you begin to see investments that make money, the money will find you. 5. Start small. Know that you will make mistakes. My rich dad often said, when someone does something to make a killing, they get killed. Invest in property less than an hour from where you live. 6. Stay humble. When people make money, they often get cocky. When people get cocky, they make foolish mistakes. It is through humility and humor, being able to laugh at our successes as well as our failures, that we learn best. In other words, don't take yourself too seriously. The septic system blowing up and flowing into my first condo still causes me to laugh. Today, I am cautious about investing in anything that is downhill from something else. Today, I do know exactly what rolls downhill. 7. Dream big. The only difference between my first investment and my investments today are zeros. My dream was not real estate. My dream was financial freedom. And each property, good or bad, was a stepping stone to that dream. 8. Remember, the world is filled with hard-working poor people. Many people today are slaves to money. Today, many people will have to work for money all their lives. So, every day, remind yourself not to be one of them. Work hard at having your money work hard for you so you do not have to work hard for money. 9. There are no perfect investments. Each investment comes with problems. Each investment will challenge you. Each investment will teach you something new. If you do nothing, you learn nothing. If you learn nothing, you remain poor. So remember, the only way you can fail is to fail to do something. 10. And no, I do not fix toilets. If I knew how to fix toilets, I would. So I never learned how to fix them. Instead, I learned how to hire and fire professionals, such as real estate agents, accountants who know the tax advantages of investing in real estate, mortgage bankers who personally invest in real estate, lawyers who understand real estate law, property managers who love taking care of property, contractors whose passion is building or fixing real estate, and other specialists whose business is to be the best at the business of real estate. So I do not know how to fix toilets, or how to do accounting or real estate law. But I do know who does. As the years go on, you will get smarter, and so will your team of professional advisors. Ultimately, real estate is not your asset. Real estate alone does not make anyone rich. Investing in real estate offers you the opportunity to get smarter. It is your education, good and bad experiences, lessons learned, wisdom that comes with time, And your team, a team like my team that contributed to this book that will ultimately become your greatest assets. Tip. If you do not have enough money for an investment, remind yourself that if you do not solve that problem, you will have money problems all your life. My rich dad said, if you can solve the problem of not having money, you will have more money for life. Henry Ford said, thinking is the hardest work there is. That's why so few people engage in it. Real life story. Why waste a priceless mistake? During this last real estate bubble, a friend bought one property, flipped it, and made some money. That first easy success went to his head. He now thought he was Donald Trump's long-lost brother. As the property bubble continued to inflate, he went on a buying spree, buying properties in Las Vegas, Miami, San Francisco, Mexico, London, and Phoenix. Today he is bankrupt and blames real estate for his problems. His problem was he knew only one type of market, a market bubble. He now knows what a real estate bust looks like. Since he blames real estate rather than himself, he has not learned much. He has wasted priceless mistakes. He fails to learn that it is after the bubble bursts that the real estate investors come out, and the real killings are made. The killings are made from foolish investors who got killed. Tip. The reason there are more poor people than rich people is that it is easier to say, I can't afford it, rather than ask the question, how can I afford it? The moment you ask yourself the question, how can I afford it, your most important asset, your mind, goes to work. If you use the excuse, I can't afford it, your mind goes back to sleep, and you get back to working hard as a slave to money. So please, do not allow the fear of failing to come between you and your financial freedom. Failing is essential to success. Tip. If you do nothing, you learn nothing. If you learn nothing, you remain poor. So remember, the only way you can fail is to fail to do something. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Real Book of Real Estate. Real Experts, Real Stories, Real Life by Robert T. Kiyosaki. Performed by Michael Naramore, Joyce Bean, and Mel Foster. Performance copyright 2016 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.